Welcome to Animal Voices. Leonardo da Vinci, he wrote, "The day will come when men such as I will look upon the killing of animals as we now look upon the killing of man." Animal Voices comes to you by way of Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO Radio 102.7 FM, which is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-sponsored community radio station. You can hear us live on the internet, coopradio.org, or hear many of our programs posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. Alan Jensen is our technician. Host is Marge Adams. And Marge, what will you be doing today?
Well, I have a couple of nice stories to read, and there are a couple of items that we could get to discuss regarding animals in BC.
Well, we look forward to that, Marge. And also in the studio today, we have Mark Adams. Mark, what will you be doing today?
Well, Carl, thank you very much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here. We've been friends for a long time, and my interests include animal welfare. I'll just be, as a layman, interested observer, contributing wherever possible.
Well, more about Mark Adams in the second half of this program. Shortly, we'll be speaking with Twyla Francois, who is the head of animal investigations for Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. The webpage is setfa.com. So we had a very wonderful week this week, and as far as animal news is concerned. The Libby Davies is the Member of Parliament for Vancouver East, and she presented the following in the House of Commons. She said, "Mr. Speaker, I am pleased to rise in the House today to present about 50 pages of petitions that were collected by members of the Animal Defence and Anti-Vivisection Society of BC. The petitioners feel very strongly about the issue that they collected the petition on. They urge the Canadian government to end funding of medical experiments on animals in favour of non-violent, more appropriate, ethical and reliable research methods that are increasingly becoming available. They also call for greater accountability from publicly funded researchers and higher standards of animal treatments more in line with those of European Union members. I am pleased to introduce these petitions today in the House." And the webpage for the Animal Defence and Anti-Vivisection Society is vivisectionresearch.ca. Well, Alan, maybe we can ask you just to say something about our wonderful Vancouver East Member of Parliament, Libby Davies.
Yeah, we are very, well, the whole of Canada is lucky to have somebody like Libby Davies in Parliament to keep things honest there. There aren't many people like her. She's really a champion of people who are basically oppressed by the society we live in, the government we have controlling this country. And Libby is great. She is a long, long, long time supporter of Co-op Radio. And that just reminds me that Co-op Radio's just announced the upcoming fundraising drive, which is going to start April 17th. And Libby is somebody who's always been a member and supporter of Co-op Radio, going way back 20 years. And when she was a Vancouver City Councillor, she was a supporter of Co-op Radio and remains such to this day, and has been a big help to the station in many ways over the years. Anyway, it's great that Libby presented that petition in Parliament, and it doesn't surprise me that she's the one who did. Anyway, Carl, Twyla is on the phone.
Yes, and later on the program, we'll be hearing from Paul Watson, who's sailing the high seas south of Tasmania. So that's something to look forward to. Paul Watson on his ship, the Irwin. Anyway, Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, CETFA for short, is a Vancouver-based organization. Its purpose is to promote the humane treatment of animals raised for food. CETFA exists to work towards the compassionate treatment of food animals so that their lives may be free from pain and fear. Tina Harrison founded this group in 1990 when Tina met with four others to discuss the massive abuse of animals under intensive factory farming conditions. These four visited barns and slaughterhouses and witnessed animal transport situations. They were deeply disturbed by what they saw. Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals, CETFA for short. So CETFA is opposed to the suffering imposed on animals used in factory farming. There are practices throughout the industry which are deemed reasonable and acceptable under the Act, but which cause fear, pain, and distress to the animals. Today, Twyla Francois is the head of investigations for CETFA, and she has been reviewing animal transportation issues in North America. Welcome to Animal Voices, Twyla Francois.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Well, great to hear you. And so much of the good work you're doing. So maybe we'll start off by saying, you know, there was reports in the newspapers about how many animals are arriving dead at slaughterhouses. So why would you think that so many animals are arriving dead at slaughterhouses?
Well, we know that there's probably three big issues that are coming into play. The first would be the design of the trailers here in Canada. We don't have enriched trailers like they do in Europe. In Europe, they have things like forced ventilation, onboard watering systems, and even temperature gauges in the back part of the truck where the animals are, so the driver can always be aware of whether they're too hot or cold. And here they're very basic. They're metal. Some of them have winter protection in the form of rubber slats, but it's up to the driver whether he installs them or not. So we know that's one major reason. The second issue is the transport legislation is really poor in Canada. In Europe, most animals can only be transported up to 8 hours. In Canada, ours are incredibly lenient. A monogastric, like a pig, can be transported up to 36 hours with no food or water. And if you happen to be a cow or a sheep, you can be transported 52 hours with no food or water. And this is compounded by the problem of most of our cull thousand boars, the breeding pigs, and the cull dairy cows, the ones that are used for milk production. They are the most health compromised of all of our farm animals, and yet they're going the farthest. All of these animals, the vast majority, go for slaughter in the U.S. And what happens is once they've crossed the border, the clock goes back to zero. So on top of that 36 hours or 52 hours, they're allowed another 28 hours. And the third issue that we know is a huge problem, because I'm documenting it straight across Canada, is that it's very, very commonplace in Canada to load these health-compromised animals, animals that are injured, animals with fractures. We've even seen downer animals being loaded. And downer animals are so weak, injured, or diseased that they can't stand on their own. So they're pushed, pulled, and dragged however possible to get them on the trailers. So we know that we've got three really big areas in Canada, and that's why we're having these massive numbers. And I think some numbers came out from the BC SPCA saying that 2 to 3 million animals arrive dead, and over 10 million arrive injured or are somehow condemned because they're down, injured, or too diseased, and therefore they shouldn't have been loaded in the first place.
Now, that's absolutely a staggering amount of animals that are condemned. 10 million animals, farm animals, are on the trucks, and when they come to the slaughterhouse, they're condemned. What happens to them, and why do you think that so many? I mean, you've outlined many of the conditions on the trucks, but maybe there's something that's endemic even before they actually get into the truck.
Yes, definitely. And actually, studies have shown this, that when an animal goes down, it actually takes 2 to 3 weeks for it to go down. So they're definitely being loaded when they shouldn't be. And we know, for example, with cull sows, that because they have such intensive confinement their whole life, they live in this barren metal crate on a concrete floor. They can only take one step forward, one step back. They can't turn around. So what happens is about 80% of them have pneumonia. So they're having difficulty breathing to start with, and then they're loaded onto these trailers that are 4 or 5 decks high. So they have to climb these really steep ramps. And you can imagine if you're suffering from pneumonia, being asked to do heavy physical exertion is very difficult. And we also know that about 80% of those same sows are laming. They develop arthritis because of the lack of movement and being on concrete. And we've also found a study in Iowa, which is where a lot of our cull sows are going, that showed that 17% of them have fractures, broken legs, broken hips, when they arrive at the slaughter plant. And while we want to believe that everything is being done correctly when they get to the slaughter plant and that they're being humanely euthanized on the truck, we know that it's not always happening. That they sort of feel that if we can get a few dollars out of this animal and get it to the slaughterhouse floor, then let's do it. So electric prods are used. I did one trailing where a downer sow from Manitoba arrived at a slaughter plant in Wisconsin, and she was electrically prodded 11 times and eventually dragged off the trailer. So we do know that best practices aren't always happening.
So what animals are we talking about here? Like 600, over to you.
Sorry, go ahead.
What animals are we? Cows, pigs? What constitutes the largest percentage of animals?
Probably the downers that we see are most often with the cull sows and boars, so the pigs, and also the dairy cows. And with the dairy cows, they're so calcium depleted that they often have osteoporosis. And so when we see them at auction, it's really quite sad. They're extremely thin. They have almost no body mass. They really just look like skeletons with white and black garbage bags sort of draped on them. They're just so weakened. And so we do see a lot of leg injuries with them as well. And if you can imagine, if you're going to be on transport for 52 hours plus potentially another 28, you need to be very strong, and you need to be able to have a good center of balance and be able to stand, bear your weight equally on all four limbs. And so when they have any sort of an issue with laming or a broken limb, they can't do that, and then they often go down. They're trampled by the other animals because we also know that the trailers are vastly overloaded. So these animals just shouldn't be loaded in the first place, and this is why we're getting so many condemned.
Now, on these long distances that these trucks are permitted to ride without caring for the animals, because these trucks are swaying from side to side, and most of these animals, like maybe we can just zero in on the cows, they 75%, I believe, the statistics from the show that 75% of all dairy cows in Canada have never been out on a green field. So, and you're talking about that, they have hoof disease. They're what you call, maybe you can just accentuate the what is called a depleted dairy cow.
Sure.
Have you seen any of those in your investigations?
Yeah, almost all of them are depleted in some way. We see a lot of mastitis as well. And the reason for that is because of the conditions they're kept in. They are kept in barns almost all the time. They're on a concrete slab. Excuse me. Their rear legs and hind end is generally in their own waste much of the time. So they end up getting all sorts of problems with their hooves rotting, and the fractures are generally in the rear end as well. So they have had this sort of this life of confinement. And we have a lot of problems with hooves not being trimmed as well, and that leads to lameness because laminitis develops. They end up having to put all of their weight on the rear of their hoof, which puts incredible pressure on them. And so you can see them, at auction, they walk very, very gingerly. Their hooves are hurt, they're ulcerated, they're rotting. They have mastitis in their teeth because of E. coli getting in and causing an infection. And, there's a hygiene issue with that as well because there is pus in that milk. And it is certain amounts of pus are allowed in human consumption dairy milk. which is probably quite shocking to most people. but a simple round of antibiotics would clear it up. But it just, it never fails to amaze me how rarely that seems to be done. It seems that almost sort of the average dairy cow that we see, she's so skinny, she's weak, she's got a huge udder, often it's almost on the ground. And her hind end is sort of rotted away. Her bones are very fragile. And, you know, and we still see handling of these cows with electric prods, which I cannot fathom. Electric prods were designed for cattle, for beef cattle, who are, you know, a sort of a sturdier animal, and I don't think they should be used with them either. But definitely with the dairy cows, it makes no sense, because these cows have been around people. They've gone to the milking parlor twice a day. But, you know, they react to humans so well. There's no reason. Like, if we would lead them from the front rather than push them from behind with an electric prod, it just makes me sort of angry that there is this level of contempt for the cull dairy cows. And I've seen it at auctions right across Canada. The more lucrative beef cattle will have deep-bedded, straw-bedded pens of good quality hay and water at some of them. But almost without exception across Canada, the dairy cows have nothing. They're standing in mud or pebbles, which are very painful on their hooves and feet. They're given sort of the lowest quality hay, if they're given any at all. They never have water. And yet again, they're going the farthest. They're going all the way into the U.S. So the cull dairy cows and the cull sows and boars really have it by far the worst. And we're working on a campaign. We're just designing it at this point. But what we're thinking is that a very good solution to this has actually already been tried by the government, and it worked quite well. When BSE hit in Canada, the market closed down for those cull dairy cows. No one wanted them because of the risk. So the U.S. border closed to us. And so what happened was, to try to compensate farmers for this lost equity, the government gave a subsidized on-farm euthanasia program. So if I was a farmer and I had a couple of dairy cows that were over 30 months, I knew I couldn't bring them to auction, no one would buy them, I could shoot them on farm, sparing them the horrible loading, transport, and unloading, and send in some evidence that I'd done so, and the government would give me a $150 check. And I think this is really, really very smart, and if it's something that we did for dairy cows at one point, I think we could do it again, and we could add cull sows and boars as well, because there's just huge problems with the transport of cull sows and boars. Boars have to have their teeth broken before they're loaded. Something called boar bashing takes place, where the producers or the haulers want to put as many boars on as possible, but they'll fight if they're mixed. And so what some haulers are doing is taking a crowbar and smashing them in the nose, and it's enough to break their nose and cause such severe agony that they can't be bothered with fighting one another. So, I mean, we could get around all of these horrible cruelties if we just did this subsidized on-farm program.
Now, that's so graphic, Twyla. Twyla Francois is the head of animal investigations for Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. CETFA.com is the webpage. Now, during your time in where you've been involved with CETFA, maybe you can just tell us something that you've been able to do that has made a difference to the animal welfare.
Well, we've been very lucky. It's been working quite well. That we'd always sort of tried working with government, and it's been a really frustrating experience. I've brought so many violations to their attention, and honestly, nothing's been done. And I can clearly say nothing has been done. So what we thought was, what about working with industry? They've been showing some signs of progress, and so we've been doing that. And we've met with two large pig slaughterhouses and the largest pig transporter in Canada. And we proposed to them that they do an electric prod ban. We had visited the facility over a number of times, in some cases over the course of a year even, collecting evidence to show how cruel and abusive it is. And it really is. The electric prod is often the thing that ends up putting those animals down, that they end up going down because of the stress that it causes. And the other things with it, too, I mean, it's an issue for these companies because meat quality is compromised when you use an electric prod. And maybe people listening can keep an eye out for this, but if you're ever having ham or pork roast, sometimes you'll see like a tough brown patch, and that's called blood splash, and it's actually from electric prods. I'm sorry, it is graphic, but I think people need to be more aware of what's happened to the animal that they're consuming.
Blood splash.
And what it is, it's the damage from the electric prod that it goes so deep into the tissues that it actually affects the meat. So it's a meat quality issue, too, and so by proposing it that way, and, of course, the welfare reasons that are huge reasons for the welfare problem, all three companies have agreed, and they're working on a phase-out. One company sort of went one step further, and not only are the electric prods banned in the unloading area, but facility-wide. The one company is also installing cameras so that they can remotely access on a BlackBerry to view the unloading and make sure that it's being done well. And I was at a conference last week in Alberta where Maple Leaf in Brandon, which is one of the facilities that we've worked with, they have a particularly good idea where they have a system of lights, yellow and red, and whenever the volume goes up too high, because it's indicative of the pigs being stressed and electrically prodded or handled roughly, the lights will start flashing, either red or yellow, depending on the intensity. And it's sort of a public way of shaming that driver. And then, of course, management can come over and see what the problem is. But all three companies are definitely doing the phase out, and it's making a huge difference. I mean, it sounds like such a minimal thing. But when I go and I do my observations, the volume is completely different. It was completely havoc before, just screaming, whereas now it's much quieter, much more orderly. The pigs come out one at a time instead of piling and jumping on each other and sliding around. So, yeah, that's been quite successful.
So thank you for the work you're doing. Marge has a question for you, Twyla.
Yes, Twyla. It's wonderful to hear the things that you have been doing and the impact you are having. But I want, you know, people are very selfish, and I think that the health issue of the human is far more important to most people than the comfort of animals. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how much effort do you put into directing the education of humans, just as you're doing today? Because surely people who know about these blood splashes and such things, the hideous things you've told us, are going to be impacted by that, and they're going to be more discreet in what they're selecting for dinner than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, that's completely true, and we're hoping to do this with our website eventually, where we'll have sort of a shocker of a hygiene issue or a human health issue. Another one is, and I don't know why this has never really been exposed yet, because we see it all the time, and companies advertise them quite openly, but cattle on feedlots, almost all of them have hormone implants. So industry came out at one point saying we don't feed hormones, and it's really just semantics. No, they don't feed them. They inject them.
So
a capsule of a male or female hormone is being injected into these cattle, and then we're eating those bodies. There's huge amounts of concern, and the 80% pneumonia rate in pigs. I mean, that's an issue as well, and the antibiotics that are still on the increase. I just received a study yesterday showing that subtherapeutic antibiotic levels are actually on the increase for use in farm animals. So, yeah, this is definitely an area that we're hoping to look into and to use as exposure.
Now, yesterday you mentioned that the Manitoba government was tabling amendments to the animal code. What was that all about?
Oh, this is really concerning. So the provincial Ministry of Agriculture, called MAFRI here in Manitoba, they have made some amendments to the Animal Care Act. And in some ways, they're quite progressive on companion animals. It would increase penalties for puppy mills and things like that. We do have a concern. We did meet with them and asked if they would be hiring any new inspectors, because you can have all the regulations you want, but if no one is out policing them or enforcing them, it really doesn't help a lot. And they said that they have no plans to hire new inspectors. But the very frightening thing is, farm animals are again exempt. Common practices like the tooth breaking I was telling you about, that will still be legal. And they've actually gone one step further, and it's really frightening, but they have an amendment in there that would make the movement, loading, and transport of these downer animals to slaughter legal. It's absolutely crazy. So it would be these downer pigs and downer cattle would legally be allowed to be loaded and transported. And we know, of course, that these animals from Manitoba are going the farthest. They're going to the Midwest U.S. And it's in contravention of the federal transport regulations. We fought long and hard to have the federal regulations recognize that these highly injured and suffering animals shouldn't be loaded. So we don't know how this slipped in to the amendment. I mean, we suspect that industry probably had something to do with it, because MAFRI will only work with industry groups. That's been quite frustrating, too. But what we're hoping, and I'll have this on the CETSA website fairly soon, but there will be a process of public consultation, probably in March, and we're urging everyone, whether you're involved in the industry or not, because we all really are, we share the road with these transport trailers. A lot of us consume these animals as well, so we all have a vested interest. And so we're hoping that people will register to speak or provide written submissions, just saying this is absolutely ludicrous that we would be allowing these suffering animals to be transported.
Right. In closing, maybe you can just summarize some of the main points that you feel you'd like to emphasize. Twyla.
Well, I think that as consumers, we can make a very big impact in this. We can write letters to government. We can write letters to industry. And we're finding, actually, that is more, that's working much better, writing to industry and saying, you know, I would prefer that you had a humane alternative. Like, so rather than buying pork from these sows that are kept in gestation crates, if we would write to the companies and say, can you provide at least a certain percentage of your pork from from sows not raised in there, raised on group housing, on straw? And the other thing, too, that does make an impact is, I wonder if there was a change in consumption of the products that are the most cruel. And the most cruel would be fast food hamburgers. Those come from those dairy cows. And pepperoni, sausage, sausage patties. Those come from the downer or the used up sows, because the meat is so poor. There's the blood splash, there's the electric prodding. Chronic stress changes the pH as well and makes the meat very soft and exudous. What they have to use those meats for are the highly spiced meats to sort of hide the yuckiness of it. So if there was suddenly this huge decrease in consumption of pepperoni, or, you know, people moved away from the cruelest cuts, I think that might put some pressure on the government to do a subsidized on-farm euthanasia program. So that would sort of be my two hopes for Canadians, is to buy the less cruel cuts, to ask for a humane alternative, or, of course, avoid the whole issue.
Thank you, Twyla. And Alan has a question.
Yeah, just getting back to what you were saying about the changes that the Manitoba government, the Department of Agriculture, is making. I'm just wondering which level of government is responsible here and controls these issues that we're talking about today.
Yeah, here it's the Minister of Agriculture, so it's Minister Roseanne Wojcik, and I haven't had a great relationship with her office, unfortunately. Every other provincial government, provincial Ministry of Agriculture has been really forthcoming, willing to meet, willing to negotiate, but in the 4 years I've been providing reports to Minister Wojcik, I've never received a response. So it is really, really frustrating. And the Winnipeg Humane Society has been running a campaign here called Quit Stalling to try to get these sows out of those gestation crates. And it's been going on, like 5-6 years now. And it hasn't really made a dent in government yet either. We still have no commitment that they'll try to phase these things out. It's directly with the Minister of Agriculture. And then under her is the Office of the Chief Veterinarian. But the ultimate say would be right with the minister.
So when we're talking about transportation of animals between provinces or from Canada to the United States, do federal regulations come into play, or is it still the provincial regulations?
Yeah, anything to do with transport and slaughter would be federal. And this is sort of the confusing thing of why they can even be offering this amendment of allowing the transport of downers to slaughter, because the province is superseded by federal regulation, and federal regulations take care of transport and slaughter. So it really makes no sense at all. But the provinces would be responsible for things that go on inside livestock barns, livestock auctions, collecting stations, and then right when they get from the point of when they're being loaded, transported, and unloaded, that's the federal government. So that's a bit frustrating too, because when I do try to bring a cruelty case or a violation to the government's attention, there's a lot of finger pointing. You know, did that animal go down on the farm, then it's a provincial matter. Did they go down in the process of loading because they were being electrically prodded, then it's a federal matter. So it's very difficult to get any kind of action on the violations. And we're just not getting it. And so we have to move to a different level now, try to work with industry. And I think the biggest part is trying to get this out to the public, too, because I know for a fact Canadians are not going to tolerate it when they learn about what's happening.
Thank you, Twyla. You've been an absolute wealth of information. And you're the head of investigations for the Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. That's www.cetfa.com. Thank you for what you do.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Bye for now.
Bye.
And you're listening to Animal Voices on CFR Radio, 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And we're going to go over to Alan, and we'll have a... Alan, do you have a bit of lighthearted music for us today?
Sure, I always have anything appropriate I have at hand here, so don't worry. So we'll have a little music from the Grand Hotel Trio, but this is the Grand Hotel Trio is stepping into a little Dave Brubeck in this piece.
Okay. How are we going to do it this morning? Thank you. Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you by way of Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver. Many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And as we promised you, we do have a message from Captain Paul Watson, sailing his ship, the Steve Irwin, south of Tasmania. Marge Adams will be giving us the story. But, and above all, we have Mark Adams in the studio today. Mark Adams, maybe you can tell us, how comes you are here today?
Well, Carl, we've been friends for a long time. I really listen to the show quite frequently, and we just happened to be at an Art That Barks benefit, and I was able to make a contribution to Art That Barks in order for the privilege to be on the show, and I thank you for having me.
You made a financial contribution. Thank you. Money makes the world go round. So, anyway, Mark, as you mentioned, I've known you for a long time because we both were Toastmasters at the environmental organization Earth Save Toastmasters. What did that mean to you?
Earth Save Toastmasters is an awesome way to increase your confidence in public speaking and get the message out of what you want to say.
Right, and so you have been a member for quite some time, and during that time, did you change? I mean, what skills did it provide you with?
Absolutely. I got really confident in my public speaking skills, especially speaking extemporaneously, that is, off the cuff. It really gives you that confidence to be on guard and ready to go no matter what the situation.
Now, Mark, you've been a vegan for some 20 years. That's a fair stretch. Why are you a vegan?
I started out being a vegan because, well, first of all, I started being a vegetarian because I was challenged by one of my high school friends just to try. He was really into Buddhism and vegetarianism, so I was challenged to be a vegetarian for 2 weeks and see how I felt, and I felt amazing after that. And in the years following, I gradually moved from vegetarianism to veganism as I learned more about animal ethics and health and those types of issues.
Now, we heard from Twyla Francois about dairy cows and their transportation. That must have, some of the statistics there must have shocked you a little bit. It just reinforced your ideas of why you are a vegan.
Absolutely. I am totally shocked, and it's really time for Canada to quit stalling and come up with safer and more humane ways to move animals from the farm to the slaughterhouse.
Now, Mark, I never forget, many years ago, I was in Bangkok, and I always stayed at this very same Buddhist sort of, it's not a resort, it's a kind of guest house, or just not too far from Koh San Road. And lo and behold, there you were.
That was such an amazing surprise, Carl, to meet you totally unexpected in Bangkok. It was fantastic.
So anyway, yeah, that must have been at least 10 years ago. Now your life has changed too, because you've met the love of your life in the Philippines, and no more traveling, which was a passion of your life for many years. And so now you have a 2.5-year-old boy. And so how does that fit in with your life?
Well, it's certainly changed my life a lot. He's our little son is really fantastic. We're still traveling a lot, but mainly we go back and forth to the Philippines now. Like before, I was traveling to many different areas of the world, and now it's mainly back and forth to the Philippines, although we do take side trips sometimes.
Now, when you came into the office, into the studio this morning, I introduced you to co-host Marge Adams, and I said, well, I can see resemblance here.
Carl has a tremendous imagination.
It must be somewhere in the family, somewhere or other. Marge is such a wonderful activist. As her husband was, maybe you can just tell us where your husband was involved in First Nations affairs.
Technically First Nations. He was a Métis person and from Saskatchewan, Howard Adams, Dr. Howard Adams, I should say. And he was a teacher, and he was an organizer, very great organizer. He did a lot of organizing in the province of Saskatchewan, And he, many people think he made a difference to the Métis people, and I feel very proud of that.
Yes, Marge, and all the Adams. So, Mark, that having a family also means that you've had to, you have responsibilities. And no more wandering around as you feel, where should I go now, which part of the world? So at the age of about, I think you were about 45, 50, you suddenly found yourself that you had to put a little bit more bread on the table.
Indeed.
So how did that work out, Mark?
Well, it worked out just fine, and I'm really fortunate to have a terrific wife who's also a vegan. And she's a fantastic cook. She can take the traditional Filipino recipes, which unfortunately, of course, are meat-based, and she can create awesome vegan delights and gourmet dishes from them.
Wonderful.
So she's really terrific. So.
So now, Marco, I'm already salivating just to that, but you would make me salivate a bit more if you gave a little bit of the description of a main course and a maybe traditional dish, Philippine dish that's vegan.
Oh, sure. Well, there's a traditional dish called adobo, which Filipinos use pork, unfortunately. But she takes veggie meat and spices it up really fantastically with different spices to make it very meat-like in texture and extremely tasty. And with the traditional Filipino vegetables and a little bit of coconut milk, it's so tasty.
Uh-huh. So now, veggie meat. So what's that made from?
Well, it's made from processed soybeans, and it's a good transition food for people who are moving from meat-based diets to a vegetarian or a vegan diet. It's something that is kind of got a familiar texture and a familiar taste. It tastes essentially identical to meat. It's just that it's not. It's much healthier for you. So it's a good product.
I buy that product, and Eve's is the one that I usually buy because it's available in the store I shop in. Y-V-E-S. Yeah, very good.
Now it's been said that coconut is almost a complete food. Mm-hmm. In many ways, you can survive. If you had to reach the desert island and there were only 10 coconut trees, you could probably survive for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a myth, or is there some truth to it?
Well, I think there's some truth to it. In the Philippines, whenever I'm there, it's always extremely hot. And I really make it a point to eat and drink the juice and the coconut meat of several coconuts a day just because I need to stay hydrated. And I feel fantastic. It's almost like I don't really need that much more. Of course, I eat other vegetables and fruit for variety.
Yes, so
but
look very
coconuts
healthy.
Are awesome. Oh, thanks, Marge. It's our genetic background. Yeah. We come from the same ancestry.
Now, one of the interests that, of course, when we go to South America or Asia or something like that, people only know coconuts here in the shredded form, or they see a coconut. But in Asia, the people wouldn't eat a coconut that has the firm flesh. They have the young coconut.
Mm-hmm.
So just maybe give a description of this young coconut.
Oh, the young coconuts are the best, Carl. They're big and they're green, and when you open them, they have this really water-like juice that comes out, except it's not water. It's a little bit more substantial than water, but it's so nourishing and so tasty. You could drink that for hours. It's really fantastic. And then, in addition to the water, they have a little bit of solid meat. And it's not like the hard coconuts. It's not like really a hard meat, but it's kind of like
a little slimy,
soft and slimy, and also very body
creamy.
Friendly,
creamy.
Very creamy. That's good thinking there, Marge. But yeah, it's so tasty and nutritious as well.
Now I'll be a little bit slimy, and I'll say that I read somewhere. I'm going to ask you, Mark, if this is true, that coconuts, of course, so good for you, and so full of that you can survive on it, protein. Everything, but there's a balance in nature, and that I heard somewhere somebody once told me that if you eat the coconut, the white flesh, it's it can constipate you. Often people go to Asia and they have a diarrhea. Well, this will bind you up. But the liquid in the coconut, the juice or the milk, as they call it, is the opposite. It's a laxative. So nature, in its very own form, has its balance there. Have you ever heard that before?
I have indeed, and that's why I always like to eat, in addition to drinking the coconut milk or the coconut juice, I always like to eat the coconut meat as well. That really gives a great balance to the diet.
Well, Mark, it's been a pleasure having you here as a result of the Arts at Barks exhibition that was held last year, and you put your name down and you said you wanted to come into the studio. We invite other people who say want to come into the studio and come and see what we're all about. Give us a call through our webpage, or people, I'll even give you my phone number, 604-924-4966. And maybe just wrap up and we're going to have a bit of music. Over to you, Mark, to close off.
Well, thanks very much again for having me on the show, Carl. I think you guys are doing some awesome work. It's really unfortunate that we have a situation in Canada where animals are really treated like production units and farmers are often rewarded for ignoring their welfare. But through the work that you and Marge and Alan and everybody's doing here at Animal Voices and Co-op Radio and your other organizations, we're making a difference in terms of raising the public awareness and really helping to move those issues to the forefront.
Thank you very much. Now, I have a question, one last question here. You have a newsletter called Building Your Dreams. Now, can you tell us how that gets to the public?
Oh, well, people can subscribe to our free newsletter. Yeah, my wife and I put out a free newsletter. We are really interested in the financial education of people because in addition to not being aware of like animal issues, we find that people are really unaware of financial issues. And some of the recent events in the world economy have really underlined this for us. So if people would like to try out one of our issues, please send me an email. It's Mark Sparkle, MarkSparkle@gmail.com. Yeah, MarkSparkle@gmail.com, and we'd be happy to send you out a trial issue.
Thank you, Mark, and for being a sparkle on Animal Voices. And yes, you're listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Our webpage is animalvoices.org, and many of our programs are posted there. Do we have time for just a little bit of music? And then we have Marge has a story, and then we're going to get a message. We'll read. We've got a message from Captain Paul Watson.
Little story here that I really enjoyed. Soup for the Pet Lover's Soul is where it's taken from, and it's called The Eyes of Tex. Eric Seal thought the scrawny puppy at his feet was perhaps 5 weeks old. Sometime during the night, the little mixed-breed female had been dumped at the Seal's front gate. Before you ask, he told his wife, Jeffrey, the answer is an absolute no. We are not going to keep it. We don't need another dog. When and if we do, we'll get a purebred. As though she hadn't heard him, his wife sweetly asked, what kind do you think it is? Eric shook his head. It's hard to tell. From her color, markings, and the way she holds her ears in a half lop, I'd say she's part German Shepherd. We can't just turn her away, Jeffrey pleaded. I'll feed her and get her cleaned up. Then we'll find a home for her. Standing between them, the puppy seemed to sense that her fate was being decided. Her tail wagged tentatively as she looked from one to the other. Eric noticed that although her ribs showed through a dull coat, her eyes were bright and animated. Finally, he shrugged his shoulders. Okay, if you want to fool with her, go ahead. But let's get one thing straight. We don't need another Heinz 57 mongrel. The puppy nestled comfortably in Jeffrey's arms as they walked towards the house. One other thing, Eric continued. Let's wait a few days before we put her in the pen with Tex. We don't want Tex exposed to anything. He's all the troubles he can handle. Tex, the 6 weeks-old cattle dog the Seals had raised from a puppy, was unusually amiable for a Blue Heeler, a breed established by ranchers in Australia. So, although he already shared his doghouse with a yellow cat, soon Tex happily moved over and made room for the new puppy the Seals called Heinz. Not long before Heinz showed up, the Seals had noticed that Tex appeared to be losing his eyesight. Their veterinarian said he thought the dog had cataracts that might be surgically removed. But when they brought Tex to the specialist in Dallas, he determined that the dog's poor eyesight was only partially due to cataracts. He made an appointment for Tex at the local college veterinary laboratory. Doctors were determined that Tex was already blind. Oh, I'm sorry. Doctors there determined that Tex was already blind. They explained that no medical or surgical procedure could have halted or delayed Tex's progressive loss of vision. As they talked on their way home, the Seals realized that over the last few months, they had watched Tex cope with his blindness. Now they understood why Tex sometimes missed a gate opening or bumped his nose on the chain-link fence, and why he usually stayed on the gravel walkways traveling to and from the house. If he wandered off, he quartered back and forth until he was on the gravel again. While the couple had been preoccupied with Tex's trouble, Heinz had grown up plump and frisky, and her dark brown and black coat glowed with health. It was soon obvious that the little German Shepherd crossbreed would be a large dog, too large to continue sharing a doghouse with Tex and the yellow cat. One weekend, the Seals built another doghouse next to the one the dogs had shared. It was then they noticed that what they had assumed was puppy playfulness, Heinz pushing and tugging at Tex while romping with him, actually had a purpose. Without any training or coaching, Heinz had become Tex's seeing-eye dog. Each evening when the dog settled in for the night, Heinz gently took Tex's nose in her mouth and led him into his house. In the morning, she got him up and guided him out of the house again. When the two dogs approached a gate, Heinz used her shoulder to guide Tex through. When they ran along the fence surrounding their pen, Heinz placed herself between Tex and the wire. On sunny days, Tex sleeps stretched out on the driveway asphalt, said Jeffrey. If a car approaches, Heinz will nudge him awake and guide him out of danger. Any number of times we've seen Heinz push Tex aside to get him out of the horse's way. What we didn't understand at first was how the two of them could run side by side, dashing full speed across the pasture. Then one day, the dogs accompanied me while I exercised my horse, and I heard Heinz talking. She was making a series of soft grunts to keep Tex on the course beside her. The Seals were awed. Without any training, the young dog had devised whatever means were necessary to help, guide, and protect her blind companion. It was clear that Heinz shared more than her eyes with Tex. She shared her heart. That's by Hansi L. Rogers.
Yes, thank you much for that great story about Heinz. Well, we do have a message from Captain Paul Watson, and he is aboard the small boat, relatively small boat, so Steve Irwin, in the Southern Ocean. And he writes, after almost a week of battling dense fog and heavy winds and swells, the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society ship Steve Irwin has once again found the Japanese whaling fleet in the Ross Sea. And the fleet, the Japanese whaling fleet, was located 2,100 nautical miles southeast of Hobart, Australia, in the middle of the Ross Sea. And Paul Watson, he writes, and he says, we are 7 miles from the fleet and approaching. We see the Nishan Maru and two harpoon vessels, the Yushan Maru. Anyway, I just get so overwhelmed by these people doing, being so heroic and chasing these ships against all odds. Sorry, I lost it here. Anyway, Paul Watson writes, "There's a lot of loose ice and moderate patches of fog. The winds are at 40 knots, which means the helicopter cannot be deployed. The Steve Irwin, that's the ship on which Paul Watson is now in close pursuit of the Japanese whaling fleet." So, anyway.
He is. I cannot not help but admire him, and he's often up against the legal authorities to make matters worse. But he's a marvelous defender, isn't he, of the ocean life?
He is. Mm-hmm. Leonardo da Vinci said, "The day will come when men such as I will look upon the killing of animals as we now look upon the killing of man." Thank you for listening to Animal Voices.